Good afternoon, and bring the State Affairs Committee to order. It is 3:07 p.m., Thursday, May 4th, 2017, in the Max Grinberg Room of the Alaska Capitol. The Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Tuck.
Here.
Representative Knopf. Not present. Representative Wohl.
Here.
Representative Ledoux.
Here.
Representative Birch.
Here.
Representative Johnson. Not present. Chair Chris Hompkins.
Here. And with 5 members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. Representative Knopf is excused today. Thank you also to Kelsey, Calvin, Heather for helping us keep the committee moving. And we have 2 bills on today's agenda, House Bill 184 from Representative Josephson relating to discrimination, gender identification, sexual orientation, as well as House Bill 173. This is the second hearing for House Bill 173 relating to the Climate Change Commission. Also, Representative Josephson's legislation. It is all Representative Josephson today. It's a big day. And there's a CS to be offered for HB 173, and we'll be looking to possible committee action on this bill. HB 184, this is the first hearing, and we will hold that bill and hear invited testimony. I should also note, I'm going to run up to the 5th floor for a piece of legislation I'm co-presenting in finance, at which point I will pass the gavel to Vice Chair Ledoux and run back down as soon as I'm done. So that takes us to the first item on today's agenda, House Bill 184 from Representative Josephson and also Ms. Megan Holland. Please put yourself on the record and present the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, let me apologize to the committee about something. I think, a little bit disheveled, and I have a good excuse, and I have a witness, and that is Representative Birch, who doesn't look as disheveled, but he and I took a boat to the Greens Creek Mine at 5 a.m., which requires getting up before 5, and then we...
good math.
Yes. And we just landed 30 minutes ago, so... That's my excuse, but hopefully I'll be forgiven by the committee. And my apologies to the viewers to that extent as well. So what you have before you today is a bill that has languished a bit in prior legislatures, at least starting with the 28th legislature, which is 5 years ago. I think even before that, I think Representative Curtula, who represented downtown Juneau, had it in the 27th legislature. She may have had it before then. This is a bill that, in my view, is critical because there is, you know, we look at civil rights issues. They were prominent, of course. The Civil War was partly about civil rights issues. And the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments are civil rights amendments. We then had the women's suffrage movement. We had the elimination of Jim Crow and the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, and the Fair Housing Act in the 60s. This is regarded by many as sort of the last frontier of civil rights, and that is the need for anti-discrimination legislation nationwide. The chair knows that the Supreme Court through decisions like, I think, Lawrence out of the state of Texas, written by Justice Kennedy, and Romer, a decision out of, again, the Supreme Court that involved a Colorado law that was found to be unconstitutional. There's a case called Hardwick out of Georgia that was just prior to those two decisions. And more recently, I think in 2015 or 16, was the Obergefell decision, of course, which said that same-sex individuals could marry in all 50 states. And this is sort of connected to that in that, as I said, this is, and mind you, no one believes that civil rights are fully implemented relative to race and gender, or that issue has been resolved. But at least it's mostly, not entirely, but mostly been resolved, particularly as to race, as a matter of law. It's the enforcement part that gets tricky. This is the new frontier, and And what this bill does, and then I'll turn it over to Ms. Holland for a sectional, is it says that it would be that the State Human Rights Commission would have jurisdiction over discrimination it finds, and it would effectively have power to investigate that discrimination and offer remedies for that discrimination in areas of housing, lending, employment, public accommodations, and so this, and specifically as to a discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression. The Human Rights Commission has asked that this be given to it. That is, that this legislature and the governor authorize this sort of power. It notes that because of the lack of jurisdiction over these issues, it has to turn these matters away. So it has to sort of absolve itself and wash its hands of these kinds of discriminatory practices. And I think that fundamentally, there are obviously some important personal and liberty and even spiritual interests at stake. There are also economic interests at stake. The municipality of Anchorage has implemented this bill. It's not precisely this bill, but it's very close. One of the things we've done in the legislation is we have added a religious exemption, which was not in Representative Curtula's original bill, nor was it in the bill that I had in the 29th legislature. And we think that, first of all, that that's compelled by a decision noted in the sponsor statement called Hosanna-Tabor. But we also think that it provides some comfort to those who are concerned that, for example, because of a religious belief or practice, that they would be compelled to not discriminate where their faith would dictate something else. And so that's essentially where we are on this. Our largest city, Anchorage, obviously has implemented this. It came after a long fight. The capital city of Juneau has implemented something very similar to this. And I think that I talk about tea leaves sometimes. I think I talked about them on the House floor recently. I think that this is sort of the place where the world is headed, and so we might as well nudge it along and help it get there. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. We could entertain a few questions perhaps before going to the sectional. Let's do that. Representative Ledoux.
So I'm just curious, Representative Josephson, when you talk about a religious defense, there's that case that is probably fairly well known. It took place, I think, someplace in Washington or Oregon, where a woman owned a cake shop and she didn't want to make a cake for a gay wedding, and then she was sued, and she alleged that her freedom of religion was impacted, but she lost that case. If she were in Alaska under your bill, would there have been the same results?
Just, if I may, just one moment. I think that, I'm trying to remember what, I think it was a decision out of New Mexico, it was the original sort of cake case, but
Washington State.
Well, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, Washington State Supreme Court unanimously ruled that the baker did not have such a right. And I think that even though ours has a religious exemption, there may not be such a right under this bill either. In all candor, I need to spend more time thinking about this body of law and the nuances. And of course, it all gets tied into how what level of scrutiny gets applied and whether it's strict scrutiny and whether there's a fundamental right and all of those kinds of analyses. But I think that similar claims were made relative to race and gender. And so I think that it'd be my hope that notwithstanding the religious exemption that the courts, the Alaska Supreme Court may be concerned about that sort of correlation or claim. Now, to be clear, the cake may not be baked in the church kitchen, but it would be baked. And but again, I can't say that I'm an expert in this, and it's an area that I need further research and reading on.
So just a follow up, just if you know the answer, where would you think, if it wouldn't apply to a situation like the cake in Washington, where would you assume that it would be applying? In what situations?
Well, so for example, in our bill at section 5, I think you'll see that it would certainly be applied in a church hierarchy where perhaps a person was applying to be part of the clergy and wanted to assert a right to an LGBT lifestyle. In that circumstance, the exemption would apply and the church could decline the person based on their sexual preference, gender, or other orientation.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So
Follow up.
It kind of looks to me, if Section 5 is the only exemption, then it pretty much looks to me that it's basically talking about hiring a minister or a priest or, you know, something like that, as opposed to an exemption for somebody who does not fall within those categories. Is that correct?
Through the chair, I think that is correct. And again, part of the way the bill, the ordinance rather, enjoyed the success it did, and I think I can't swear to this, but I think it was not a close vote ultimately in the municipality of Anchorage, was because of compromises. And it's not just a compromise, because that's sort of belittling of the interest. Sensitivities about the need for religious exemption.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee for the sponsor? Sectional analysis, Ms. Holland.
Through the chair, Megan Holland, staff to Representative Josephson. Before I begin, I would like to add that we do have two people online to answer more specific questions. If you would like to address them, we have the Executive Director of the Alaska Human Rights Commission, Marty Buscalia, and also we have the researcher and author of the first and I believe only survey study done on this particular type of discrimination in the state of Alaska. And with that, I'll run through the sectional. So House Bill 184 is an act that adds to the powers and duties of the State Commission for Human Rights and is relating to and prohibiting discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity or expression. Section 1 amends the powers and duties of the Human Rights Commission to include sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression to the list of already protected categories that currently include race, religion, color, national ancestry, physical or mental disability, age, sex, marital status, changes in marital status, pregnancy, or parenthood. Section 2 amends to add sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression to the list of discriminations which are cause for public concern, and also asserts the need for the state to prevent such discrimination in employment, credit and financing practices, public accommodations and sale, lease or rental of real property. Section 3 amends to add sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression to the categories of protected civil rights. Section 4 amends to add sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression to the prohibitions against unlawful employment practices. And Section 5 creates a new section which provides the religious exemption for the prohibitions against discrimination under the area of employment, stating that Section 4 does not apply to the employment relationship between a religious organization and a minister employed by that organization.
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Section 5, as Representative Ledoux asked some questions about it. So if the exempts a religious exemption for the prohibitions against discrimination under the area of employment, so could the religious institution also, the other sort of parameters of discrimination that are mentioned earlier, race, religion, color, national ancestry, could any of those be also applied in Section 5? And would that exemption apply to those too?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, yes, that that exemption does apply to those other categories. So, for example, a church is exempt from discriminating on the basis of race or gender or marital status when it comes to hiring a minister type position. So this would add, this would also exempt sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression from the list of protected classes in this specific area. And yeah.
Follow up, Representative Wolf?
Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused. So there's certain human rights protections. I'll use age as an example. And obviously, people hire whomever they want to hire, but I guess they can't say, you know what, you were good for the job, but you're just a little too old, so therefore I'm not going to hire you. But under Section 5, a religious institution could in fact say, or you know what, I was going to hire you, but you're Native American, so I'm not going to hire you. They could say these things, and it would be totally within the law. Is that correct? Am I misinterpreting that?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, I can find more information on that topic, but I'll speak to where I'm very confident from personal experience. I know with real certainty that, for example, my wife is a practicing Lutheran, and I know that in what's called the Missouri Synod, which is sort of the moderate, if that word can be used, there are three main synods: Wisconsin, Missouri, and the Evangelical Lutherans. In the Missouri Synod, one cannot be a woman and a pastor. It is not allowed. And so I would bet that with real confidence that there's 100% chance a woman could not pastor in a Missouri Synod. They could in the Evangelical Lutheran Church, however, which is a different Lutheran Synod. So I'm confident that as to gender, that's true. I must tell you that as to race, to the extent that happens in a religious setting, it strikes me as really a concern and even offensive. Not that the gender consideration doesn't, it's just a little more familiar to me. But I hope that helps.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm just trying to figure out what the bill does, not sort of what experience is. But, you open an interesting question, which is, what if it's a religious school and they're hiring teachers or janitors or staff for the school? I mean, a pastor may be one particular focused job, but let's say it's a religious school and they need to hire a teacher and they say, well, we'd like to hire you, but you're X, Y, or Z, so therefore we're not going to hire you, and in fact we're covered by the law to do that. Is that what this is stating here? I'm just trying to understand.
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, I don't want to stretch and say anything that I'm not 100% sure of, but I am fairly certain that the Supreme Court case which created this exemption was in regards to a specific type of employment that could possibly compromise the internal governance. That was the phrase used, the internal governance of the institution. So I believe that a janitor may not compromise that internal governance, but a teacher may. That being said, it's a very specific exemption, and I'd be happy to look into it and more concretely answer that question for members of the committee.
Thank you.
Further questions, or perhaps proceed with a sectional analysis, Ms. Holland? Ms. Holland, it seems Representative Ledoux also has a question. Representative Ledoux, on the section we're at.
Yeah, so I'm really confused about this too, because it only seems to exempt a minister. And minister is really clearly prescribed. So, for example, would you, under this law, maybe it's the way it's currently written. Maybe it's not the problem with the exemption. Maybe I'm just confused about the current writing of the law. So, would, for example, a Jewish school have to hire maybe a practicing Muslim who on his or her free time, not during the school time, but the free time, you know, advocates the end of Israel?
Through the chair.
I know that's kind of a far-stretched hypothetical, but...
through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think, again, that has to do with what position this person would be hired to do. If it were a ministerial type position, then I believe that the exemption would apply, and if it weren't, then I don't believe that it would. It is, as you said, it is a very narrow, specific exemption, and its purpose is to protect the internal governance of religious institutions.
Representative Justice.
Through the chair, I mentioned my own wife, and she attended a Lutheran college, and for tax purposes, she is declared a minister of the gospel, and so I suspect that this term minister may be read fairly broadly. Again, this is the language from the Anchorage Municipal Ordinance. That doesn't make it perfect. It doesn't even make it something the committee wants to adopt or not adopt. But I just wanted to make that point.
Thank you.
Please proceed with the sectional, Ms. Holland.
Section 6 amends to add sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression to the prohibitions against unlawful practices in public accommodations. Section 7 amends to add sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression to the prohibitions against unlawful practices in the sale of rental or real property. Section 8 amends to add sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression to the prohibitions against unlawful practices in financing and extending credit. Section 9 amends to add sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression to the prohibitions against unlawful practices by the state or its political subdivisions. Section 10 defines blockbusting and amends to add sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression to the prohibitions against unlawful practices in blockbusting or practices by a real estate agent to close a transaction. And Section 11 amends to add definitions of gender identity or expression and sexual orientation to Alaska statute.
Could you offer a lay definition also for the record for blockbusting?
Blockbusting? Mm-hmm. Let me just look it up in the bill really quick.
Section
2. Yeah.
Well, she's doing that, I can sort of
stab at it.
Please, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, it is essentially an unlawful practice whereby a real estate agent, for example, would try to undermine the right to for someone, for example, of a specific sexual orientation to live in to live in a neighborhood that they otherwise would live in by suggesting to other neighbors, I think, in that neighborhood that there's reason to leave. But I'm going to give it back to Ms. Holland, see if she wants to clarify.
Through the chair, just a sort of layman explanation of blockbusting. It's a practice of essentially trying to keep certain people out of certain areas. It's essentially like a real estate version of segregation. For example, raising the price for someone because they are a certain ethnicity or religion or sexual orientation, or as the sponsor previously mentioned, it's also convincing people within the neighborhood that certain things are going to happen, and it's a certain there are certain methods that real estate agents can use in order to keep certain types of people out of certain neighborhoods.
Thank you. Representative Tuck, a question along these lines?
Well, no, I was just going to help explain, but it did really well. It's basically segregating neighborhoods. Yes, you did really well. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that concludes the sectional, and if there are other at-large questions from the committee, we can take those now. We also have five invited testifiers, as arranged by the sponsor's office. Eliza Kaufman from ANDVSA, and then also in line in Anchorage, all of Anchorage. Melissa Green, author of the Anchorage LGBTQ Discrimination Survey. Marty Busaglia, Busaglia, executive director of ASHRC, as mentioned by the sponsor. Billy Farrell, director of Identity Alaska, and Reverend Matt Schultz of Christians for Equality. Are there any further questions from the committee before we move to invited testimony? Seeing none, we'll start with ANDVSA and Eliza Kaufman. Please come forward, put yourself on the record, and present your invited testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Eliza Cosney.
Oh, my
sorry,
gosh.
I'm not sure how that got communicated.
I apologize. Thank you.
Eliza Cosney, policy specialist at the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And I will say that this piece about the religious exemption, I need to look at further and consult with the members, but we would like to offer our support for the overall legislation, discrimination against people based on their gender identity and sexual orientation is a specific concern for victim advocates. And so talking to our 19 member programs, which are the domestic violence shelters and victim service providers throughout our state, a particular concern was raised about trans people and their extreme vulnerability to sexual and other types of violence. So the bulk of my testimony will just share some statistics that I think will speak volumes. And we just want to really urge your support of this legislation after careful consideration and ensure that it passes in a timely manner. As Representative Josephson stated, this needs to be a priority. It cannot wait. So even with important policy gains and gradual sociocultural shifts towards understanding and tolerance, the LGBT community continuously faces very real discrimination and inequality. This discrimination and inequality perpetuates high levels of violence against people who are LGBTQ. Responding to and preventing such discrimination and violence is a civil rights and human rights issue. The transgender community in particular, and specifically trans youth and trans women of color, face the threat of violence on a daily basis and need laws in place to protect them from discrimination. This vulnerability can be related to a lack of resources due to deeply embedded disenfranchisement and discrimination in schools, housing, employment, and access to health care. So to highlight just a few of the statistics, statistics documenting transgender people's experience of sexual violence indicate horrific levels of sexual abuse and sexual assault. One in two transgender individuals are sexually abused or assaulted at some point in their lives. More than half experience some form of intimate partner violence. Some reports estimate that transgender survivors may experience rates of sexual assault up to 66%, often coupled with physical assaults or abuse. This indicates that the majority of transgender individuals are living with the aftermath of trauma and fear of possible repeat victimization. 12% of transgender youth report being sexually assaulted in K-12 settings by peers or educational staff. 13% of African American transgender people surveyed were sexually assaulted in the workplace, and 22% of homeless transgender individuals were assaulted while staying in shelters. There was an 11% increase in anti-LGBTQ homicides in 2014, and looking at the broad category of homicide victims, 50% were trans women of color. So unfortunately, you know, we could go on with these statistics. I'm sure that you all are familiar with some of them. But particularly as service providers serving victims every day, we encourage any legislative frameworks to support us as we continuously expand our own LGBTQ cultural competence and sensitivity to these populations. Discrimination compounds economic, health, and other disparities and is a root cause of violence that perpetuates the culture of violence against people who are LGBTQ and the social acceptance of this violence. We join our colleagues who are victim advocates all around the country in saying, to create a social, political, and economic environment in which violence against women no longer exists, we must support equality and safety for all. So let's make sure that Alaska is on the right side of this issue. Please take a stand and show that Alaskans do not support discrimination and violence and do support tolerance and peace. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Cosme, thank you. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony. Next on the list is Melissa Green in Anchorage. Ms. Green, if you can hear us, please put yourself on the record. State your affiliation and prevent your invited testimony. And I should note on a sort of time management point, because there is another piece of legislation on today's agenda and we are out at 5 o'clock, I guess just be cognizant of time and that we'll need to sort of make progress in order to get both bills attended to today. But Ms. Green, please go ahead and present your testimony.
Okay, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. My name is Melissa Green. I'm in Anchorage. I was invited to testify because I was the principal investigator of the Anchorage LGBT Discrimination Survey, which we conducted in Anchorage in 2011. But there actually were also some prior studies done that I was also involved with that are relevant. In 1986, I was the principal writer for 1 in 10, a profile of Alaska's lesbian and gay community. That was a statewide survey of 734 gay, lesbian, and bisexual respondents on a wide variety of questions, including experience of discrimination, violence, and harassment. Then in 1989, I was the co-author of the report, Identity Reports, Sexual Orientation Bias in Alaska. And that directly was looking at housing discrimination in Anchorage, and also actual case studies of violence, harassment, discrimination, et cetera, statewide. And I'll come back to something about that at the very tail end of my testimony here. Of course, in 2009, when Anchorage began to take up questions of whether or not to pass such an ordinance. All of that research was 2 decades old. So after 2009, which was the first attempt in Anchorage to get this in law, and it didn't happen at the time, but we decided that it was time to update the research. So, but we also wanted, for the first time in Alaska, to include gender identity and expression along with sexual orientation in our examination of discrimination. So the result of that was the Anchorage LGBT Discrimination Survey, which we conducted in January through March of 2011. The key findings of that survey were disseminated in a preliminary report, which I completed in November 2011. I believe that Megan Holland told me that she would be including a copy of that preliminary report in materials that she was providing to the committee. The final report, which I completed in March of 2012, includes those key findings in its executive summary, but also has a whole bunch of other information in it, including more detailed data from the survey, a very detailed methodology, extended discussion of findings of the two older reports that I mentioned, comparisons with other types of discrimination in Alaska, such as racial discrimination. They look at the case filing for several years of both the Anchorage Human Rights Commission and the Alaska Human Rights Commission and the Anchorage Equal Rights Commission up to that date, and also a comparison of our findings on anti-LGBT discrimination with national data on anti-LGBT discrimination. So we ended up with a sample of 268 lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender men and women out of an estimated 11,000 LGBT residents of the municipality of Anchorage. Those figures, by the way, are based on estimates by the Williams Institute that about 3.5% of Americans identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, and a further about 0.5%, I think it is, I can't remember the exact figure, identify as transgender. I want to also add that the Williams Institute estimates that for Alaska statewide, that there are probably about 19,200 LGBT adults, of whom 13,100 are part of Alaska's workforce. For the actual data I'm going to give you, and I'm going to keep it brief, I'm going to focus on employment discrimination because that's the most common type of discrimination that's brought before Equal and Human Rights Commissions. Our survey from 2011 found that 44% of our 268 respondents had been harassed by their employer or reported that they had been harassed by their employer or coworkers because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. 16% reported they were forced to leave their jobs due to harassment. Another 21% reported they'd been turned down for a job because of gender identity or sexual orientation. 18% had been denied promotion. 15% said that they'd been fired because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. In looking at the difference between lesbian, gay, bisexual versus transgender people actually tend to, and in our findings, tended to report discrimination, violence, harassment at higher levels than lesbian, gay, and bisexual people did. But in any case, those figures are fairly high. We found also that our findings on racial, on sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination were fairly comparable to rates of racial discrimination. And this is, some of our data was actually directly compared with 2009 Anchorage Community Survey data on racial discrimination. That was a survey that was conducted by the UAA Justice Center. We also found that our when we compared with national studies on anti-LGBT discrimination that our respondents reported similar rates. So I'm going to close just by referring back again to the 1989 report called Identity Report. One component of that report, which we called prima facie, documented 84 actual instances of anti-gay bias, discrimination, harassment, or violence, including three murders. But most importantly for what we're here about today, those narratives, as we compiled those stories, they were evaluated by a former intake investigator of the Alaska Human Rights Commission, who found that 42% of the instances we documented would have been jurisdictional under AS 1880 at that time, had 1880 at that time included sexual orientation as a protected class. And again, that report didn't look at gender identity, but and I don't know of any current effort to compile that kind of actual narrative and actual story of discrimination, but part of the point is, I think, Representative Josephson in his introduction of this bill stated it that why it is that such studies have to be done by the population that is trying to get protection from discrimination. That's what we've had to do in the past. Meanwhile, the Alaska Human Rights Commission has had to turn away people from being able to investigate these cases because it's not jurisdictional. So the whole point is, let's make it jurisdictional. And one last thing, the Williams Institute in 2015, in a report called Based on Sexual Orientation in Alaska, estimates that about 6 cases per year would likely to be reported to the Alaska Human Rights Commission if sexual orientation and gender identity and expression were made jurisdictional. So that ends my testimony, and I'm here for any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, going to move to the next invited testifier, and in light of the time, and next up is Matthew Schultz with Christians for Equality. Mr. Schultz, if you can limit your testimony to 4 minutes or less, but please put yourself on the record, state your affiliation, and present your testimony.
Thank you for hearing my statement. My name is Reverend Matthew Schultz. I'm an ordained minister with the Presbyterian Church USA, and I'm speaking today on behalf of Christians for Equality, as well as the Alaska Christian Conference. And I'm speaking in support of this, of Bill 184. I believe that sexual orientation and gender identity should be added to the anti-discrimination laws so that all of Alaska citizens can have equal protection. It was mentioned before that there are spiritual factors at stake here, and I think that's true. And sadly, much of the discrimination that is done under the guise of spiritual leadership, is done under the false impression that the Christian faith requires it. So I want to correct that error and encourage Alaska to protect LGBTQ people from religious-based persecution. The ministerial exemption is sufficient here. It does a complete job. Freedom of religion is not in jeopardy at all. But really the heart of what I want to testify to is that I have studied and taught extensively on the topic of morality and ethics, and I can say without hesitation that any system that allows for discrimination against even one person is immoral. I want to repeat that. Any system that allows for discrimination against even one person is immoral. The list of protected categories exists because people within those categories are in physical jeopardy and emotional jeopardy. Their jobs are in jeopardy. They're discriminated against in large ways. And as has been testified to moments ago, the LGBTQ community, it fits right in there. It's discriminated against regularly. And it's our ethical responsibility to stand up for them and with them and to address and prevent this discrimination. It's not illegal to be gay, and yet people can be legally fired simply for posting a photo of their legal spouse on their desk. They can lose their home for the same reason. Alaska can and must do better. And so I request that this is voted and passed out of committee.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Questions from the committee? We're atrophying membership, but we're still going strong. Okay, thank you, Representative. I believe there's a 4 p.m. filing deadline. That is what's happening. Our next testifier online is Billy Farrell with Identity Inc. Mr. Farrell, please put yourself on the record, state your affiliation, and present your testimony.
Hello, my name is Billy Farrell, and I'm the Executive Director of Identity Inc. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you okay. Thank you. Please proceed.
So I want to thank the committee for hearing this important piece of legislation today. I'd also really like to extend a thank you to Representative Josephson and his staff for making today possible. As I said earlier, my name is Billy Farrell. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska's largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender advocacy organization, Identity Inc. Identity's mission is to advance Alaska's lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, and we envision a world where all Alaskans can be their authentic self in their community and still feel safe, supported, and welcome. Today, I want to express my support for House Bill 184 on behalf of not only the LGBTQ community in the state of Alaska, but the many clients that we serve throughout the state. We have made much progress for the LGBTQ community in recent years, but the fear of discrimination is still very real for many Alaskans today. Due to the hard work of passionate residents and lawmakers, LGBTQ folks living in Anchorage and Juneau, as well as city employees in Bethel, have basic non-discrimination protections. However, a majority of our residents still live in communities without legal protections from discrimination due to one's sexual orientation and or gender identity and expression. This means every day many of our neighbors, our family members, our friends have to make the decision of whether they can be out or open or keep their job, stay in their home, or stay safe in public. This is unacceptable that members of our community have to face this injustice with little to no recourse. Currently in Alaska, because our non-discrimination protection does not include sexual orientation and gender identity, the State Human Rights Commission is barred from investigating such claims of discrimination. We need House Bill 184 so when someone faces discrimination, they can report that discrimination, that claim can be investigated, and they can seek justice for that wrongdoing. In addition, our state's lack of an inclusive non-discrimination protections hampers our economic growth. Equality is good for business. 89% of Fortune 500 companies prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation, and nearly 6 in 10 prohibit discrimination based on gender identity. Changing our laws to reflect our values will help Alaska attract and retain the best and the brightest in the workforce. All hardworking people, including those who are gay or transgender, should be treated fairly and equally by the laws of our state. All Alaskans should have the opportunity to earn a living to provide for themselves and their families. Updating the law will ensure that all people in our state are judged on their job performance and qualifications. Nothing more, nothing less. No one should have to live in fear of being legally fired for reasons that have nothing to do with their job performance. We've heard a lot of discussion in this legislative session about the future of Alaska. In my previous job, I had the great privilege of working with quite a few of those future members, young LGBTQ Alaskans across the state. When these young people turn 18, when they are considering going to college or starting a job, they are not thinking of staying in Alaska. And that is because they do not feel welcomed and they do not feel safe. We cannot, in this one piece of legislation, change that culture and climate of hate, but we can at least create a foundation where all Alaskans can feel safe, welcome, and afforded in their community. Again, discrimination is not an Alaskan value, and it's time to make those values law. Thank you again for hearing my testimony, and I appreciate the work of the committee on this important piece of legislation.
Thank you very much, Reverend Schultz. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. And that takes us to our last testifier, Marty Buscalia, also in Anchorage. And please put yourself on the record, state your affiliation, and present your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Marty Buscalia, Executive Director of the Human Rights Commission. I'd first like to address the the discussion earlier that on religious exemption. There does currently, under Alaska Administrative Code Title VI, exist an exemption. It's specifically 6 AAC 30.985, and it states that any organization operated for charitable or educational purposes and supervised or controlled by or in connection with a religious organization is not prohibited from limiting admission to or giving preference to persons of the same religion or denomination or otherwise making a hiring decision that will promote the religious principles for which it is established or maintained. So that protection exists under current law. I'd also like you to know that in November of last year, the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights passed a resolution which called on the legislature to expressly prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity and expression. And it authorized the staff to work on proposed regulations addressing the inclusion of prohibitions against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity and expression under the existing law prohibiting sex discrimination. We have drafted the language for the regulation, which is now in the Department of Law for legal opinion. There are many steps to follow, including public comment, review by the governor, the legislature, and legislative legal, among others. The resolution could be stopped at any point. We believe it would send a much stronger statement of the state's position on anti-discrimination with greater force if we change the statute. And we believe it would be a more robust interpretation of the law if the statute could be changed. The Commission's mission is to seek out and eradicate discrimination throughout the state of Alaska. The Commission has a long history of supporting equal rights for all Alaskans and also has a long history since at least 1990 of supporting greater protections from discrimination based on sexual orientation. Alaska's laws against discrimination are based on the principle that people should not be denied employment, a place to live, public accommodations, or government services for arbitrary reasons that are not connected to their abilities or qualifications. Making sure people are not discriminated against because of their sexual orientation or gender identity or expression is consistent with this principle. Alaska has been a leader in adopting strong civil rights protections. The Human Rights Act was adopted a year before the Federal Civil Rights Act of 1964, and Alaska added protections to its law for persons with disabilities 3 years before the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed in 1990. For Alaska to now strengthen our statute to protect people in the LGBT community would be consistent with a strong advocacy of civil rights in the state. I want to thank you for allowing me to testify before you today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Buscaglia. Any questions from the committee? That concludes our invited testimony, and I think we will hold this bill to move on to the next item on today's agenda, unless the sponsor would like to offer any closing comment. And you'll need to come up anyway, since you're the sponsor of the next bill. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one, and that is the individual who I can't remember the name now, but essentially the idea that a person could lawfully marry someone of the same sex, and as is customary in the United States and elsewhere, have a photograph of their loved one and be terminated for that photograph is something the members of the committee should find very, very disturbing, and I hope we'll take to heart.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. And moving to the next item on today's agenda, House Bill 173 relating to a climate change commission. This is the second hearing, and it's my understanding there's a CS that's been distributed to members of the committee. Perhaps, Representative Josephson, you could speak to the CS, and then we can entertain a motion to adopt the CS.
Yes, in fact, I think what I will do, Mr. Chairman, is defer to my aide, Megan Holland, who worked on this.
Through the chair, Representative Tompkins, would you like me to just discuss the changes that were made from the previous?
Please do, and okay. Also if you can put yourself on the record.
Sure. Megan Holland, staff to Representative Josephson. So essentially this CS removes the oil surcharge and also removes state funding from the Climate Change Commission. And I provided a summary of changes for you. It's fairly simple. Sections 1 through 4 were removed, anything related to the oil surcharge, so that's completely gone. Section 4419666 was removed, which created the Climate Change Response Fund. The words in the Climate Change Response Fund was removed from Section 4419662. So all sources of state funding have been removed, and under this CS, the commission would run solely off of user fees and grant funding.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
What do you mean by user fees? Who would be using it?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. Users include government entities, non-government entities, nonprofits. These are different organizations working in the area of green energy, climate change response. So those would be the users, and the services which would serve as a vehicle for those fees include grant writing services provided by the commission, as well as other forms of assistance.
So,
follow up?
Nobody would be required to use anything, and nobody would be required to pay any money. Am I correct about that, including the state?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, when you say nobody, you mean?
No entities. I mean, if somebody decides they don't want to use the commission, they don't have to pay anything. And the state doesn't have to pay anything. This is all entirely voluntary, is my understanding.
Through the chair, yes. And I did just remember one detail that I'd like to put on the record, and that is that it is also listed in the bill that government entities and tribal organizations could not be charged user fees. Just wanted to clarify that.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
So just one follow-up. So if it's all voluntary, why wouldn't you just form a nonprofit? I mean, why do we need a bill to do something which is like totally voluntary that is going to operate off of, it sounds primarily on grant, totally, on either grant funds or people that think that it provides a good service and wants to use it. Why do we need a bill instead of a 501c3 organization?
I'll try this one. Through the chair, for Representative Ledoux, I think the answer is that this is a state commission, not unlike other commissions, and it is tasked with a number of things relating to mitigation, grant receipts, coordination with other institutions, both in government and out of government. So it is a commission that will have a lot before it, and it's now a commission that doesn't have any resources under the CS, but nonetheless, it is a statement. There's no doubt that if this were to pass, it's a statement of public policy by the legislature that climate change is real, that it seriously impacts Alaska, and that we need a commission to begin the process of both working to mitigate climate change and to fund, for example, new talk schools and Kivalina schools that have fallen into the sea or into a river and or exposed to those threats. So it is very much sort of a in some respects taking off from where the Governor Palin's commission was working. However, it models its membership on, to some degree, coastal zone management, which I know is now defunct, but it only models it in the sense that the makeup of the commission is going to be is going to include a lot of local interests. So the mayor of the Kodiak borough, for example, or the Aleutians East borough. And so there would be a lot of local input in the commission. I don't know if that's helpful.
If I might add.
Sure.
Through the chair, if I might add, one of the primary purposes of this commission is not actually to provide the same purposes that nonprofits do. It's actually to support those nonprofits and to support those other efforts. We've seen that our state misses out on actually billions of private and federal funds for these sorts of efforts, and one of the major purposes of this commission would be to actually support those nonprofits that are seeking to make those changes.
And just one more follow-up question.
Representative.
So I know in section 44.19.652, it talks about compensation, and that's per diem and travel expenses. Is that also going to be paid for through the user fees and the grants?
Through the chair, yes.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in a previous testimony, I think you or your staff or Representative Josephson mentioned that a study was done and the majority of economic impact from climate change was projected to be in the interior due to the amount of infrastructures there. And some people think, well, it's all on the coastal. And it looks like most of the people on the nine members appointed by the governor, I don't see anyone northern, southeastern. Maybe I'm missing it. They look mostly like coastal places and not from the interior where the majority of the impact is going to be. Am I reading that correctly?
Through the chair, you are, and I believe there was consideration of an amendment to add a seat in the interior, and all I can do at this point is assure you, Representative Wool, that at the next committee of referral that would happen. But that was an omission, and it needs correcting.
Follow up.
I mean, I just, excuse me. I'm getting better. I'm not coughing as much as I was a couple days ago. With the selection based on region, I would hate for this to be sort of a regional push and pull or tug of war or a regional sort of battle, on that climate change obviously affects everywhere. I don't think anyone necessarily, I know we're noticing the effects up here in Alaska more than in other places at the moment, but it does affect many places in Alaska. So, you know, I would hate for the commission to be sort of a battle zone between different regions and who needs what funding and which place is being affected more. I mean, are you concerned about that at all? Or is this, I mean, the overall goal is to bring awareness to climate change or to mitigate it? Or I'm just trying to figure out what the overall mission is.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, I'm not worried about any regional tensions. I think that the way the membership is drafted, that actually would be avoided because there'd be a seat at the table for all these different regions. I think the idea is sort of consistent with the Coastal Zone Management Act, is that folks in a regional setting would be on the front lines and be in the best position to sort of know what those impacts are. And then, as I noted, the powers of the commission under 44.19.660 are broad, and they would be sort of a clearinghouse for receipt of all of this information and for study and for grant seeking, coordination with other agencies, public outreach, monitoring and reporting. It's all there, And it's also noted in, under duties of the commission, 44-19662. As I indicated when you heard this bill before, it was a much more ambitious bill because it involved a surcharge on the, using the TAP spill prevention response fund. And now, because of some concerns about that element, it's, I think, less ambitious. But I think at the same time, it's less ambitious only in that there are fewer resources to try to do this with. But we think this is a starting point to begin this process. You know, two governors ago, we had a belief that this was a concern. And I think the impact of climate change has only grown. And that it's important that that we recommence these efforts.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Justin. I have a question about the composition of the commission. In noting the various commissioners who serve in ex officio capacities, is it significant that the statutory language in the CS doesn't specify or the designee of the commissioner? Is how does all that play out if a commissioner isn't available, or do they have the latitude, or is it implied that they have the ability to have a designee attend commission meetings in his or her place?
Mr. Chairman, you know, there is a section on alternate members, and it speaks to deputy commissioners at the bottom of page 3, and so I'm confident that because there are as many members as there are, that the absence of any single commissioner won't undermine the commission's duties and tasks. But I guess I'd mostly refer you to 44-19656 on alternate members.
Thank you. I'd also like to recognize Representative Johnson, who arrived at 4:12. Further questions from the committee on the CS? Representative Wolf.
Thank you. Can you tell me, since I don't know, that's what I'm asking, is there other sort of commissions or committees working on this stuff? I mean, for example, next week in Fairbanks, there's the Arctic Council Ministerial, I believe, where 1,000 people or so show up. And I mean, there's a lot of, you know, activity on this. And is this in any way redundant, or is it being done in any other areas right now that I'm not aware of?
Through the chair, and I'll ask Ms. Holland if she wants to add anything to this as well, but Representative Wool, my understanding is, although this is a subject of keen interest of the lieutenant governors, and it's certainly something he is looking into as a matter of policy for the Walker-Mulott administration, there is no particular state effort. No doubt, as you've heard in other committees like Commerce and Economic Development hearings and related hearings, the topic of climate change comes up not infrequently. But it has been, as a state effort, by virtue of a commission, it has basically been suspended since the Palin sub-cabinet commission, I guess, was disbanded. You know, certainly the University of Alaska has a lot of research on this, and UAF in your district, this is a big topic of concern and research and study. But there's nothing emanating from the state government itself that I'm aware of that is sort of centralized in looking at this issue.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question on the makeup of the committee. If you look on page 2, where it says to make up the board, I guess. But item E says the Upper Cook Inlet area, including the municipality of Anchorage and the Matanuska Sioux Center borough. That encompasses a lot of the population of the state getting one representative. Disproportionately underrepresented, I would say, and I was just wondering, I guess what I would wonder is what your goal of the committee is, if it's not by population or equal representation?
Well, through the chair, Representative Johnson, we were just discussing some of that, and it's laid out in Powers of the Commission 44-1960 at page 4, and described in great detail there, and also under duties of the commission. They are broad and pretty all-encompassing. In terms of what you noted, I don't think the interest here was in having a one-man, one-vote kind of membership, like we do here in the legislature. And I think the interest was in geographic scope. And that's why my team and I came up with what we've come up with. And that's also reflected also in the commissioners who would have the greatest stake and exposure to concerns about climate change, which would also have membership.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson?
No follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative Ledoux, a motion.
Yes. I move to bring the CSBAR HB 173 version 30-LS0163/R before the committee for discussion.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the motion is passed. I'm going to take a brief at ease.
Okay, I'm going to move to rescind my previous motion.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the previous motion is rescinded.
Okay, can I make another motion?
Please, Vice Chair Ledoux.
I move to bring the CS for House Bill 173, version 30-LS0163/R as the working document, before the committee as the working document for HB 173.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the CS is adopted as the working document for the committee for House Bill 173. With the CS before us, we did notice public testimony today. I just want to make sure, are there any further questions from the committee before we move to public testimony? Seeing none, we'll open public testimony and start with those in the room. I see Buck Lindekugel with SEAC. Mr. Lindekugel, if you could come forward, put yourself on the record, state any affiliation, and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes in light of the
Thank
number
you,
of people
Mr.
online.
Chair. If you would beg my, if I could beg your indulgence, we have another citizen here who needs to go pick up her child.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
If I could have her step in to spot, that'd
Please.
Be perfect.
Please, yeah. Ms. Danielle Redmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Danielle Redmond, and as an Alaskan and as a mother, I'm here to speak in support of HB 173, establishing a climate change commission. I support this bill for many reasons, but in the interest of brevity, I will highlight just one. This year, our state is confronted with a massive budget deficit that has strained the legislature. In all of these budget conversations, I think it's important to look ahead and to point out that Alaska is on the front lines of climate change impacts, which will result in enormous costs for the state. Having a body to study these questions and to support communities like Shishmaref, whose existence is at stake, seems like the very least we should do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Redmond. Impressively succinct. And good luck getting your kid. Mr. Lindekugel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Buck Lindekugel, and I'm the conservation attorney for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. We're based here in Juneau, but our members live throughout Southeast Alaska, including, well, as well as Anchorage, Fairbanks, and even some in Bristol Bay. Briefly, we welcome action by Representative Josephson and Tarr on climate change, because we can't ignore the long-term implications of climate change on our economy and our unique way of life here in Alaska. We are pleased that this bill appears to put a focus on climate impacts to rural Alaska, because it provides important support to local communities and nonprofits who are on the front lines of this important issue. We need to act now. Our president has made climate denial a staple of his success and has appointed a climate denier to run the Environmental Protection Agency. It's time to get to work here in Alaska on positive local job-creating solutions to climate change. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions from the committee? Seeing hearing none, thank you for taking the time. And moving online, we'll work from the Homer LIO first. Bob Shavelson, please put yourself on the record, state any affiliation, and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity. My name is Bob Shavelson. I'm the Advocacy Director for Cook and the Keeper. We're a nonprofit organization started in 1995. We focus on clean water and healthy salmon. We've got offices in Homer, Soldotna, and Anchorage. And want to speak in support of HB 173. It's long overdue, and I think the debate is over. We know definitively that burning fossil fuels causes climate change and ocean acidification, and as you just heard, Alaska really is on the front lines of rapid climate change. We've all seen and heard about the receding glaciers and the disappearing sea ice and the melting permafrost. Where I live here in Homer and Kachemak Bay, we've seen a variety of fairly significant impacts. We've got a massive aphid that's devastating our forest down here. We've had incredibly large seabird die-offs, hard-shell clam die-offs. Our razor clam population on the east side of Coconut has dropped off. There's no personal use harvest anymore here. We're seeing rising, never-before-seen incidence of paralytic shellfish poisoning. So a variety of things that are directly linked to a warming climate down here. And probably the most disturbing thing that we're seeing, and my organization has been researching the interface between climate change and salmon streams for over a decade now, and we've been putting temperature data loggers in the streams, and we routinely find that the temperatures in our salmon streams violate the Clean Water Act standards for temperature. And we know that temperature causes stress in salmon and makes them more vulnerable to pollution and predation and disease. And so of everything else that climate change threatens in our lifestyle and our fisheries are at grave risk if we don't do something soon. And thank you. So I've only got a little bit more time. I'll just say I support HB 173. I'm very disappointed that the funding mechanism has been removed. I think without adequate funding, this is just going to be a tiny baby step. I think we need to take some giant strides to address the severity of the problem here. So I'd encourage you to put back a funding mechanism. And with that, my time is up. I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Shavelson, for the testimony. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you for taking the time, Mr. Shavelson. Moving on to Anchorage, Elizabeth Roderick, if you can put yourself on the record, state any affiliation, and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Yeah, my name is Elizabeth Roderick. I'm a lifelong resident of Anchorage. I couldn't hear everything that was going on. It sounds like the bill's been changed quite a bit, but I'm so, so appreciative of the fact that you're considering actually taking action on climate change. The state isn't doing anything. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting for the state to do something. It's really overdue. HB 173 at least starts to move on it. As it was already mentioned, it was started by Governor Palin in 2007, but it's been stalled ever since. I'm losing sleep over this issue because I hear from so many people who are so worried. I know you know lots of our communities are experiencing already big economic losses. I mean, tourism and fisheries are the third and fourth biggest sectors of our economy. I know in 2015, warm water temperatures and low river levels killed salmon in Matanuska and Susitna areas. Hundreds of our Arctic char that were stocked by Fish and Game died. I know in January of this year, the U.S. Secretary of Commerce granted Walker's request for a declaration of a disaster for our pink salmon fishery. and that harvests in Kodiak, Prince William Sound, Chignik, Lower Cook Inlet were terribly under the forecast. We know that NOAA has determined that we've got increasing acidity in our waters that's dissolving the shells of the snails that feed our pink salmon and our herring and our mackerel. People are really seriously worried. And I know, I'm sure you know, there are so many other negative impacts in the state. The Arctic sea ice is called the air conditioner for the world because of the way it plays in regulating global temperatures, and it's disappearing at an alarming rate. Our infrastructure, as people already mentioned, is being badly impacted and will cost us way too much if we don't work on it now. We've lost something like 300,000 caribou up in the north from drowning and starvation due to the warmer temperatures. People I know in Shishmaref and Newtok and other communities, their lives are on the line. Their water is on the line. I mean, it's crazy. So I'm so appreciative. I mean, even our military, I've talked to the state military leaders, are saying this is the biggest threat to our economic security as well as our just plain old national security. I, too, was really unhappy to see that there had been a change to the surcharge question, because we really do need to do, you know, this is for us. This is for
our people. And Ms. Roderick, if you could wrap up your comments to stay within the allotted time. We're just a little bit over 2 minutes.
Move forward with climate change adaptation plans soon, and do everything you can, really, to give us a hand. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you for taking the time, Ms. Roderick. Also in Anchorage, Karen Cameron, please put yourself on the record, state any affiliation, and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you very much. My name is Karen Cameron. My affiliation is PEPA. I have 3 points I'd like to make. One is that we all seem to be agreed that the Arctic is the major place where the greatest change is taking place on our planet. It seems like we have no leadership from Alaska that could make Alaska a model for the rest of the world. having a commission like this would allow all kinds of communication between scientists and between citizens and between governmental officials and a number of places, such that we could have one vision as to what it needs to be done and how we can go about it. There are incredible sources of funding that we're missing out on. National Science Foundation, FEMA, USDA, NOAA. I see things that are just going through our fingers all the time. There are a lot of very fine nonprofits that could apply for these. And they would probably be shut out by other states because it would look like a state has more resources than a small nonprofit, so that money could be funneled through the state of Alaska, which would be marvelous. I think that the issues of who is going to be on the commission is important, and I would certainly encourage that Commissioner Major General Lori Hummel be appointed to that. I think that there are important legal issues and issues of consequence in our safety being where we are as a state. And I thank the people that are working on this.
Thank you, Ms. Cameron. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you for taking the time to testify. Also in Anchorage, Kristen Collins, please put yourself on the record, state any affiliation, and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you. My name is Kristen. I'm an organizer at the Alaska Center. With warmer Alaskan winters expected to be the norm mid-century, we are years behind for the establishment of a climate change commission. Our Arctic communities and others are already faced with the impacts of a warming climate and feel them every day. I support House Bill 173 because it's a step that our state needs to take forward to be able to react and recover from climate change impacts. I support House Bill 173 and urge you to prioritize other pieces of legislation that enable our communities to be resilient in the years and changes to come. Like mentioned earlier, I'm also disappointed the funding system has been removed, but am appreciative of the opportunity for House Bill 173. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Collins. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, moving on in Anchorage and Rappaport, please put yourself on the record, state any affiliation, and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for this opportunity to testify in support of HB 173, which wisely proposes a mix of relief and adjustment strategies for addressing climate change in Alaska. My name is Anne Rappaport. I am a 38-year resident of Alaska, where my career focused on fish and wildlife biology with a federal agency and a nonprofit. I'm testifying today on behalf of myself. You've heard already, Alaska's ground zero for climate change. During my 38 years in Alaska, I've seen glaciers melt and our gardening season significantly lengthen. On the dire side of life, we have coastal erosion and river flooding causing millions and millions of dollars of damage to countless villages and infrastructure throughout our state. Invasive species are spreading with threats to wild fish, wildlife, and habitats that support subsistence, commercial, and recreational uses of tremendous economic, cultural, and other benefits to all Alaskans. It's way past time for the state to implement a thoughtful and coordinated approach to addressing these changes and threats to our existing economy and ways of life. HB 173 presents the start to this approach. It would bring our state agency and elected leaders together in a climate change response commission to come up with solutions for Alaska. It includes some grant procurements and assistance, technical and financial assistance to communities, advancing renewable energy technology, and advising the governor and legislature on climate policy, all very much needed. We need to swiftly adopt this. Like everybody else, I'm very disappointed with the change in the funding. The source that was proposed, 1 cent per barrel surcharge on oil production, which is, of course, oil produces what causes climate change, seemed very, very reasonable, and it wasn't going to address our budget, and it provides money to do all these things that are so, so very essential. I'm concerned that user fees and grants now proposed are not going to provide sufficient funding. I'd like to thank Representatives Josephson and Tarr for sponsoring this bill and encourage the committee to favorably move it out of committee and through the full legislature. It's past time to bring our state leaders together to address climate change. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rappaport, and I'm going to take a quick at-ease as I head up to the fifth floor and pass the gavel, but allow Vice Chair Ledoux to gavel us back in just a second.
I'm going to gavel back in now. So the next person on the line is Joma Olsen. I hope I'm not saying your name from Homer. Joma, do you want to identify yourself and tell us with whom you're affiliated? And then you may have 2 minutes to testify.
Thank you for hearing me. My name is Bjorn Olsen. I'm with the organization Keflavik Bay Conservation Society. I'm a lifelong Alaskan resident. And recently, this last winter, under the umbrella of Keflavik Bay Conservation Society, I started an organization called Alaskans Know, K-N-O-W, Climate Change. And part of the reason that we felt motivated to start this organization is because we see a real flat-footedness within our state to address this issue. And just a couple of little clarifying facts. The EPA has listed that states that Alaska over the last 60 years has warmed 3 degrees Fahrenheit, with more than twice as much as the global average, and we've warmed a whopping 6 degrees in the winter over that same time. And anybody that you know watches the Iditarod knows that during this century alone, 3 of them had to be removed to Fairbanks restart. So this idea that this is some kind of liberal conspiracy is just put to rest because we are witnessing these effects. And so, of course, I fully endorse and support House Bill 173, and I'm also going to echo everyone else in saying that I'm a little dismayed with the very light surcharge to the price per oil has been removed. I think that was a very fair way to address the funding of this commission. I hope that can be removed, but in lieu of that, I'm completely in support of House Bill 173, and we need to join the other northern European nations that have been taking large strides in addressing climate change adaptation and mitigation for many years. We're well behind the curve, and this is a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions? Well, again, thank you for your testimony. Next person I have on the line is Mike Sally. Mike, do you want to identify yourself for the record and tell us with whom, if anyone, you're affiliated with?
Yes, this is, I'm Mike Salee. I'm in Ketchikan. Can you hear me?
I certainly can. And you have 2 minutes to present your testimony.
And I cannot hold a candle to the eloquence of which the previous eight speakers have spoken. I agree with pretty much virtually everything that the previous eight speakers have said. A climate commission might build upon projects like Thorn Bay students, who created a working model of a water pump that works off the tides 24 hours a day. It might benefit studies involving the food chain that involve salmon and sable fish because of specifically dissolving shells of pteropod due to ocean acidification. I am very disappointed that the surcharge on the per oil was taken away. I think that the oil interests have been, it's been well documented that they've undermined the science connecting climate change to human activity, and I'm apprehensive that the power these oil interests have in influencing the Alaska legislature. So, in short, I am very much in favor of House Bill 173, and I support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Salee. Mr. Salee, are you with any specific organization?
I am a member of the Tongass Conservation Society, but I am not speaking on their behalf. I'm speaking on my own behalf.
All right. Thank you very much. Do we have any questions for Mr. Salee? Well, again, thank you very much for taking the time to testify. Next person we've got on the line is Siang Smith. Siang, do you want to identify yourself? Tell us if you're testifying on behalf of any organization, and you may have 2 minutes. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Thank you. Yes. Yes, thank you.
Let's take a brief at ease for a moment. There's a problem with our equipment. See, we're having some difficulties here, and it's been explained to me that you may be watching this on your computer or your phone or something like that. And if that's the case, can you mute it? Because we're having some difficulties. There's some, I think it's called feedback. Are you still there? Have we lost her, Kelsey?
Can you hear me now? Hello?
We can. And have you turned down your, or muted your computer or whatever?
Yeah, I turned that off. Is it okay now?
It is. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. Yes, my name is Theo Smith, and I'm calling on behalf of the Alaska Climate Caucus and the Alaska Climate and Energy Action Network. We are very much in support of House Bill 173, and we submitted a letter yesterday. I'm hoping that the commissioners have received our letter. We had over 30 organizations signed on to the letter of support for House Bill 173. We had over 170 people signing it, representing over 30 organizations in Alaska. I can't emphasize enough how urgent and how important this issue is. Climate change is impacting Alaska profoundly and at an alarming rate. It's affecting people's everyday lives, and the trends are not encouraging. Since 2014, we've seen every year has been record-breaking, and this fall temperatures were 20 degrees Celsius, which is 68 degrees Fahrenheit above normal across large parts of the Arctic Ocean. The failure to act on climate change is hurting Alaskans today. Nearly 15 years ago, the General Accounting Office identified that 86% of Alaska Native villages are impacted, and Kivalliwakht
probably those new took in Shishpuref are in imminent danger. And it's very past time that we took efforts to support their relocation. You know, I don't want to repeat much of what's already been said today. I agree with much of it. We support a few changes, and that
Asiya, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up. Everybody is getting 2 minutes per for everyone's testimony.
Okay, so I will wrap it up. I just want to say we support this bill strongly. There's, when we poll our members, this is a number one or two on people's list of concerns in Alaska. So I can't emphasize anymore how important this is. And just want to also mention that we would very much like to see the funding restored for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone have any questions? All right. Again, thank you for coming out and testifying. The next person we have on the line is Maura Engel. Maura, do you want to identify yourself and tell us if you're affiliated with any organization for whom you're testifying? And you've got 2 minutes.
Okay. My name is Maura Engel. I live in Chugiak. I'm a biologist and Alaska resident since 1991, speaking for myself. As you know, and as people have eloquently stated, Alaska is at the forefront of climate change. That's not arguable at this point, and we're seeing effects, as people have described. I noted that Governor Palin has started off on the right foot by creating the commission during her tenure, and then the Parnell administration abandoned the effort. So given the position of Alaska on the forefront of climate change within the U.S. and the world, state-level action on climate change is long overdue. I'm very much in support of HB 173 because it would restart this work, and I'm very disappointed to hear now that the funding mechanism has apparently been removed. It seemed to me to be a very modest surcharge based on a very appropriate fee on the fossil fuel industry, which, as someone else noted, has been the primary cause and has also benefited both from extraction of fossil fuels. I would also urge the committee to carefully consider the amendments recommended in the letter that the previous speaker referred to from the Climate Caucus and other organizations. Some of the recommendations in that letter were to require the commission to develop a climate change adaptation plan within 2 years and to expand the climate change commission to include experts and representatives from more interior census areas. And the letter, I believe...
Ms. Engel, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap this up. You've come to the end of your 2 minutes.
Raise the surcharge to a higher level, which would still be a modest surcharge for something this important. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Any questions? Again, thank you for coming out and testifying. Next person we've got online is Raymond O'Neill. Raymond, you want to identify yourself for the record and tell us if you're with any organization, and then you may have 2 minutes.
Hi, I want to thank the committee for letting me speak here today. My name is Raymond O'Neill. I'm a 15-year resident of Alaska, working as an environmental engineer in the private sector throughout the state, including with the Department of Environmental Conservation and in communities such as Shishmaref and those in the YK Delta and Yukon Flats regions. And I'm seeing the impact of global warming. I'm not calling it climate change anymore. It's global warming, and it's a climate crisis. We're approaching an emergency. in our society across North America, including in Alaska. Vector-borne disease is on the rise. I mentioned Shishmaref, where I've seen the community eroding away and infrastructure not being supported in the community, new infrastructure not being brought in because the community is going to be having to move. HB 173 in Alaska, climate change, attention to climate change is long overdue. I understand this bill restarts work that the state had initiated earlier. Climate change is hurting Alaska now. Our communities, public health, safety, economy, and environment are impacted in a lot of ways. I would also recommend that the committee institute the amendments called out in the letter that has been referred to previously. And I'm outraged that there's any question about a surcharge on fossil fuel to fund this work. The people in the communities that are impacted the most by this are not able to fund it. However,
Mr. O'Neill, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap this up. You've come to the end of your 2 minutes.
Yeah, thank you. The industries that have profited from this need to pay back and help out. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Neill. Any questions? Well, again, thank you very much for making yourself available for testimony. The next person I've got on the line is Michelle O'Neill Purrier. Michelle, you want to identify yourself for the record? Tell us if you're affiliated with any organization, and then you may have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Michelle O'Neill Purrier. I'm from Talkeetna, Alaska, and I am not affiliated with any organization. And listening to the other testimonies, I am in agreement with HB 173. I believe that it's a social responsibility of the corporations doing any kind of resource extraction to reinvest in the communities that they affect. And so, therefore, I think that I understand that this was a point of contention. I believe that that point is simply the cost of doing business. And that's all I'd like to say, and I'm in support of HB 173.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions here? Well, again, thank you very much for coming out and testifying. And then we now have Carl Wassily. And Carl, you want to identify yourself for the record and tell us if you're affiliated with any organization, then you may have 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Carl Wassily, and today I'm speaking on behalf of Alaska Big Village Network. I'm a Yupik biologist. My family is from the Kuskokwim. We have fish camps just briefly wanted to say Alaska's Big Village Network supports communities of inclusion, and I'm concerned about the climate change. Of course, we have resolutions from the region, YK region, that date back well back into 2005, even before then, 2003. There's multiple tribes that have requested that issues be taken domestically as well as internationally to address the changes that are causing harm to the communities. And the state of Alaska has a responsibility to not only the citizens of Alaska, but in order to prevent implications of human rights abuses associated with doing nothing about climate change. I support HB 173 fully. A little disappointed not getting funding. That's discrimination. This is a good step. I really appreciate the state reevaluating what the Palin administration did in 2006, which is to commission with the funding, the fully funded commission. So I'd like to get back to once again, the impacts are not only the physical, but they're also psychological. So the harm is ongoing, particularly in coastal villages and riverine villages that are dealing with the loss of sea ice as well as increase flooding and erosion that's causing harm to the villages.
Mr. Wassily, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap this up. Your 2 minutes are up.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And do we have any questions for Mr. Wassily? Well, again, Mr. Wassily, thank you very much for coming out and testifying. And it looks like we picked up one more person off net, and that is Eric Schatzel. Eric, do you want to identify yourself for the record and tell us if you're affiliated with any organization?
Hi, my name is Eric Schatzel. I'm representing myself, and I'm here in Fairbanks. I think we can all take it as a given that Alaska must anticipate and prepare for the effects of climate change. Even if we restrict our assessment of numerous impacts solely to those on the fishing industry, that alone would justify it. Ocean acidification and hydrologic cycle disruptions are a direct threat to our economy. We need to protect the economic interests of Alaskans, and we need to identify opportunities for Alaska that might emerge as a result of the growing response to this global challenge. So I support this bill, and I would hope it would pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions? Well, again, Eric, thank you very much for making yourself available for testimony. This looks like we have concluded public testimony, so I am now going to close public testimony, and we are going to take about a 3 minute at ease. That wasn't quite 3 minutes, but we are going to hold this bill today to be brought up at a later date. This was the final item on the agenda. Thanks again, Heather, our recording secretary, and Kelsey, our moderator. And our next meeting is Tuesday, May 8, 2017, where we'll hear HB 152, Organized Militia Alaska State Defense Force, from the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. Thank you, and this meeting is adjourned at 4:56.